call the meeting to order, the Higher Education Finance Committee. Today we have two bills, and the first one is 2921, Senator Severson. And now that we have a quorum, I'll move House File 2921, make the motion that it should pass and be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's my honor to be before you today with House File 2921. It's the governor's bill for veteran issues, and it's a fairly comprehensive bill. The areas that are going to be addressed by this committee are in Sections 3, 4, and 8, specifically, having to deal with some of the provisions that we have put before this committee for approval for some of our veterans who are coming back from service and being attendees at some of our universities. I'd like to do an oral amendment, if I could, first to get the bill in the correct reading. And then page 3, subdivision 3, tuition status. At the end of line 3.8, to change that from a comma to a period, and then start on line 3.9, a state college or university, and delete the and. And that would read, subdivision 3, tuition status, a state college or university must treat a veteran as a Minnesota resident for the purposes of determining the veteran's undergraduate tuition rate, period. A state college and university must treat a veteran as a Minnesota resident for the purposes of determining the resident's graduate school tuition rate if the veteran was a Minnesota resident, and then it continues. And then if we could to page 9, subparagraph 4, subdivision 4. Line 9.24, at the end of the sentence, it says, providing grants for work, and in between the for and work, I would like to insert veteran, the word veteran. 925, the next line down, it reads, coordinate staff, towards the end of the sentence, between staff and as, insert from a veteran pool. And then in line 927, in the middle of the sentence, a liaison to, and insert who is a veteran. And then at the end of that line, after the word liaison, who is a veteran. So that would read from starting from line 924, methods may include but are not limited to providing grants for veteran work study positions and providing central liaison and coordination staff from a veteran pool as needed to enhance the ability of higher education institutions to be responsible to the students who are veterans. The commissioner shall designate a liaison to the University of Minnesota, who is a veteran. It should go between liaison and to, I apologize. To the University of Minnesota and a liaison who is a veteran to the private colleges and universities in Minnesota for the purposes of statutes.
Everyone have that?
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chair and members, the reason for that is we are asking that people who have experience as veterans and who have experienced the obstacles that we sometimes engage in making the integration from the military into the higher education system, people who have gone through that process are best suited to address that need. And so that's we wanted to make sure that that was part of that provision. And that's my oral amendments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll incorporate that into my original motion then. So you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the bill you have before you is, as I said, the governor's bill. The first one has to do with tuition status in Section 3, Subdivision 3, and really speaks to the issue of how we are treating some of our veterans as they're coming back. Now, currently in statute, if a member comes back and he has not been a resident of Minnesota, he was from Wisconsin or he was from California or Virginia or someplace, and he decides to come to Minnesota, we are constrained to charge that member out-state tuition. Now, if someone comes from a foreign country, we've made a provision for them to pay in-state tuition. I actually had this happen to someone who was helping me on my campaign. They got out of the Marine Corps, came from Washington, D.C. We're going to school at a local university here, and after the first year, got charged in-state tuition, out-state tuition. And they couldn't afford it, and consequently, they ended up getting full-ride scholarships to private universities, which was, fortunate for them. It was a loss for Minnesota, though, because eventually they left and went to another state. Our goal on this one is to say we have people that are getting out of the military. They have put their lives on the line for our freedoms, and the minimum we should be able to do is to say, come on to Minnesota. We are willing to, as a taxpayer, give you in-state tuition, and in the hopes that you will graduate from that university and become a contributing member of our local community. The second provision is delayed payment of tuition. We have had instances where in our campuses where the federal benefits are scheduled to come in. They have not come in. Maybe the individual has put it in late. Maybe there's been a glitch in the administrative system, and the universities have stopped the individuals from signing up for classes for the next semester because their tuition is not paid. And we're saying this may be an administrative error on the individual's part, maybe on the organization's part, but it should not preclude that individual from registering for the next semester and bumping him out of some classes that he may need. So we're asking the university to basically notify the federal government within 30 days and say, please send those funds for this individual, and we will supply the gap funding for that short period of time. And if we go to Section 8, the Higher Education Assistance Office, $2.6 million for appropriations for fiscal year 07 to fund a process which is kind of near and dear to our universities at this point. We're getting veterans who are coming back, and they are having problems integrating in. And if they have problems integrating in, oftentimes they'll go one semester and say, this isn't for me. And we feel like this is one step, and I'm going to have Mr. Andy Davis come forward and give you a little testimony of his pioneer work in this at the University of Minnesota. And if I could have him come at the time before we have any questions, would that be all right, Mr. Chair?
That's fine. Mr. Davis, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andy Davis. I'm a junior at the University of Minnesota, the co-founder of Comfort for Courage and the Veterans Transition Center, as well as a three-time combat veteran. I'm here today to voice my support as well as to justify some of these provisions in 2921. I'll go through those first, and then I can talk a little bit about what we've already done at the University of Minnesota. First of all, the tuition status was a big one for me. When I got out of the military, I was finding several states throughout the country that would have offered me in-state tuition. And when I wanted to return to my home state where I grew up in, I was being essentially punished to wanting to return to school here. And I found that same thing through several of the 500 veterans we already serve at the Veterans Center at the U of M. I can definitely say that it's probably turned people away from returning here when there's states like Illinois that are paying for their tuition on top of the GI Bill when we're not even doing anything. Course recognition was another one. I applied to Georgia Tech and the University of Georgia where I was stationed, and I was given a year's worth of credits for my military skills. When I came back to the University of Minnesota, I was offered 8 FIAD credits for over 17 courses that I took in the military that were a total of about 2.5 years of training, as well as combat time of 2 years. So you can definitely see where that would probably turn some folks away as well when states such as Georgia, Texas, and New York are offering almost credit-to-credit transfer that the military suggests through the ACE and ARTS program. Ironically, the University of Minnesota was one of the creators of that program, and they don't follow it. The military recommends college credit based upon courses that you took. For Ranger School, for instance, which is one that I went to, they offer leadership credit or business management credit for the 4 months of training that you go through. Of 4 credit hours, the University of Minnesota gave me 1 hour of FIET, which would have been great if I was going to be a PE teacher, but it didn't help me much through my my career plan. And the last was the delayed tuition payment. That's probably the most common problem that we see through our 500 veterans, is that they're quitting school or having to drop out, adding to that 25% dropout rate of combat veterans at the U of M, and as high as 70% at some schools throughout the country. They're dropping out because the VA is maybe up to 7 months behind in some cases, and they can't register for the next semester, they can't buy books, they're taking out personal loans, and there's no way around it. So really, for me, it was a no-brainer to ask the university to say, we know we're going to get our money. We get a report saying when it's paid out, that's when we should ask for it, and in the time being, let's let these students go to school. They're going to be contributing members of society. In November of 2004, myself and Tony Richter, another University of Minnesota student, founded an organization called Comfort for Courage. And that organization recently started the first of its kind Veterans Transition Center at the University of Minnesota. And we've since been asked in just 6 months to help set up centers at University of Wisconsin Superior, a school in Connecticut, Redlands College in California, and Florida State. And what this center does is help work through some of these problems, either through veteran mentoring, as well as bringing in the private business community. But so far, our center has been funded out of pocket, either through personal credit cards or through donations in the business community. But we've seen this an extreme need. We have, on average, about 10 walk-in veterans a day, every day of the semester, as well as about 64 emails so far from Iraq and Afghanistan of veterans who want to return to Minnesota and have heard about our center, as well as some of the benefits we're working on. And these were non-starters for some of those veterans before. They would have gone to, like I said, Illinois, where they're going to pay for their tuition on top of their GI Bill. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them, but I'm just one of many veterans feeling these same pressures.
I don't see any questions at this time, but there may be some later.
Hey, Mr. Chair, Andy brought up some good points there. I skipped over page 2, Higher Education Veteran Assistance Offices, that this bill sets up at the campuses, and in Section 8, the appropriations for the funding of those is included in Section 8. And Section 4 is the Higher Education Fairness Act, which talks a little to what Mr. Davis was talking about. If we have military members who have gone through extensive schooling in the military, that military experience needs to be recognized by our higher education institutions, and there is some manuals, some processes that we have that facilitate that, but we have probably been, as he said, the worst at really making that happen. At this time, I wonder if I could have Commissioner Dyer come up, and he will speak to Section 8 again on the appropriations issue for on-campus veterans between MNSCU and the campus.
Welcome to the Higher Ed Committee.
Thank you. My name is Clark Dyerwood. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Veterans Affairs. I would like to speak about the money parts of this bill. It's been earmarked as $2.6 million, and I wanted to talk a little bit about how that came into being. I also want to just mention briefly that there are 196 institutes that are approved for veterans benefits in the state of Minnesota. Currently, as of today, there are 187 of these institutions do have veterans in attendance. This includes not only, of course, obviously colleges, universities, but technical colleges, barber, cosmetology schools, business and trade schools, Bible colleges, theological seminaries. It includes everything. So as of February, there are 4,851 veterans signed up today taking classes in the state. And last fiscal year, the VA paid out benefits to 8,000 veterans. So, and of course, the big influx is coming. As you've seen in the paper, there's 2,600 Minnesota veterans that are just leaving for Iraq. They'll be gone about a year. They'll be hitting the system 12 to 18 months from now. So that gives you a little idea of the size. What we want to do is, as you've heard already by Representative Severson and Mr. Davis talk about, a chief feature of this is not only to help the veterans as they come back, apply for the benefits, but also to be there almost a peer-to-peer to be there to help. After Vietnam, the VA funded a system of campus reps, and they were VA employees, and they sort of covered the state, but they weren't, the biggest colleges and universities had someone full-time, but generally speaking, they did not travel around all that much. So there was a lot of colleges and universities that didn't get any help. The VA will not be doing that because the scope of the veterans are not large enough to merit that. So the VA will not be providing that service currently. The $2.6 million, what we are allowing in that is first of all, $100,000 will go to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and the remaining $2,500 will be spent as follows. There will be approximately 50 full-time equivalencies, at the average of $42,500 per FTE, which includes salary and fringe benefits. Now that means 50 full-time FTEs. That does not mean many of these will be part-time, maybe half-time, quarter-time. So the idea is it will obviously not every school is going does will have a representative, but with that number, we should be able to pretty much blanket the state. Obviously, large institutions may have more than one person. University of Minnesota, Mankato, some of the large St. Cloud, some of the large institutions might have more than one. But there would also be part-time and such a thing as someone who does itinerant service between two or three schools in a region. We did a quick printout. This gives you some idea. This is where the institutions are located around the state. So you see, there are almost every corner of the state is included in this. And if you see military affairs, they show the number of communities affected who have people that are going overseas, and the map is even denser than this. There is the need around the entire state, and that is the purpose of this funding, is to create these representatives around the state. There's also the bill calls for a liaison between University of Minnesota. It also says that our department will supervise these campus reps. We'll be responsible for seeing that they are trained and kept up to date, things of this nature. So that is a quick overview of the financial side of this $2,600.
Thank you very much.
That's all I have at the present time, Chair.
Okay, we have a question. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, on that those last points you were making, showing the map, with the U of M, we referenced each campus. I think that's fairly clear what we mean by a campus within the University of Minnesota system. But then with MinSCU, we are saying each institution within the Minnesota State Colleges and University system. And maybe if you could comment about what your intent there is, because we have campuses, we have centers. Some centers are larger than a campus. There's just a variety of different scenarios that you could lay out under what we would generally call a reference as an institution.
Exactly, and that's what I was alluding. Excuse me. Representative Carlson, that's what I was alluding to earlier by when I said 50 FTEs. That's how we arrived at the at the dollar figure. But those would be split up based on the size of the institution. The idea is wherever there is a need. Now, if there's only one or two veterans in a particular school, obviously that would not merit someone there probably in an even halftime.
Representative Pearls.
I mean, that's why I was, when I asked the question, it says each institution, and I did pick up on what you're talking about, the FTE, but the language still says each institution, and I'm not sure that the language fits what the testimony was when we talk about the range in size, and I concur with your goal. It's just that I want to make sure that your language matches what your testimony is describing.
Where is that?
That would be on section 3 of the bill on page 2, line 17. Each campus of the University of Minnesota and each institution within Minnesota State Colleges and Universities shall provide adequate services.
2.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cederson.
Representative Carlson, you have a suggestion there?
I don't have a language suggestion at this point, Mr. Chairman, other than I think as you move forward, you may want to clarify what you mean by that, because it, as the testimony indicated, you want to make sure that you're matching the need with the FTE, and yet you're requiring each campus to, as I would read that, so I think you're going to have to work
Mr.
with
Byron?
That.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that on page 2 is talking about that each campus and each institute shall provide adequate space. So I think there it is talking about the role of each institution to, you know, if there is a need, they shall provide adequate space. I think the key part as to the I had that a minute ago. If you look on page 9, it starts on line 20. The commissioner must, in consultation with the Office of Higher Education, determine the most appropriate method of allocating this appropriation to align with the needs of the students at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities and the University of Minnesota who are veterans. So I think that the part you're talking about says that the colleges and institutes of higher learning will provide space if that is necessary. And then here, when we're this part over here, deals with allocating the a rep based on the needs of a particular institution. That is my understanding of it.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to hold up on that question. Other than I do think they then have a conflict there, because you are saying that each institution, and then we say they shall provide adequate space. So it at least in that paragraph is though. Every institution is going to provide space, and I think you described something different than what the language may say, but I think we can move forward, and that can be something you can look at just to make sure it fits the intent that you're testifying to.
Representative Cederson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, to that point, we have had some institutions, albeit not too often, who have denied the veterans from having a space in particularly. So in this particular case, in Section 2, what we're saying is, or I'm sorry, Section 3 on page 2, we're saying that each institution needs to provide a space. The provision for those individuals to occupy that space as a full-time or part-time employee goes into the appropriations part of Section 7, which is the appropriations end of that. So in Section 3, we're basically saying that each university or institution must provide a space for veterans, and I guess that would, you know, be up to the judgment of the Minsky staff, the University of Minnesota staff. If there are no veterans, obviously there would not be a need to provide that space, nor would it be challenged, but if there are veterans, then they have an obligation to provide that space.
Representative Blatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a language suggestion. Maybe we'll help address those concerns. Of course, I'll defer to counsel or anyone else has a better idea here, but on line 2.17, if we were to insert before the paragraph begins, if there is a need, comma, as determined by the Department of Veterans Affairs, comma.
I would take that as a friendly amendment.
That's how it's offered, of course.
Okay. Can just incorporate that with my original amendment, or my original motion. Do you want to vote on it?
Okay.
All right, I'll incorporate that into my original
motion.
Kevin,
I think that solves the issue that I was raising. Yeah. Thank you.
Very good. Work quickly. Representative Severson, you have additional testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so.
I think there are some others.
Chair? Yeah.
Oh,
Mr. Chair, just one.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, on page 3, subdivision 3, where the new language was added on the status, could I have Ms. Novak go over that and clarify something? If she'd walk us through the change and then explain if there was an intent or if it's unintentional, the creation of two standards here, could you just walk us through that?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment begins on page line 24. And the way I have it written down is methods may include but are not limited to providing grants for veteran work study positions and providing central liaison and coordination staff from a veterans pool as needed to enhance the ability of higher education institutions to be responsive to students who are veterans. Is that the area, Representative Klaus, that you're concerned about?
No, on page 3, subdivision 3, tuition status, there was a change made to that paragraph. I'd walk us through the change, and then if I'm misreading it or if there is an intent, then maybe we need it clarified.
Let's go back.
It appears that there's two standards here, but could you just walk us through that?
Mr. Chairman and members, the first sentence of Subdivision 3 reads, a state college or university must treat a veteran as a Minnesota resident for purposes of determining the veteran's undergraduate tuition rate. The next sentence reads, a state college or university must treat a veteran as a Minnesota resident for purposes of determining the veteran's graduate school tuition rate if the veteran was a Minnesota resident or entering military service, on entering military service, and start attending the state college or university graduate program within 2 years of completing military service. My interpretation of that would be that there are two standards. There's one standard for undergraduates, and all undergraduates under this language would all veteran undergraduates would qualify as a Minnesota resident for the purposes of determining tuition.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, is that the intent then that the author had wanted?
Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pulaski, the intent when I had read through this last night, the intent was to say that any member who has served in the armed forces and decides to come to Minnesota to go to a undergraduate course would receive in-state tuition. And as I read through this, it became kind of clear to me that that was very vague. It could be construed that you had to be a member or resident of Minnesota and had to apply within 2 years. The defining line in that was gray. My intent in putting in this amendment was to, in fact, draw two different standards to say any member that lived outside of Minnesota decided to come to Minnesota for an undergraduate degree would receive in-state tuition. The second portion, which has to deal with graduate school, was that individual would have to be a Minnesota resident and would have to apply for undergraduate or graduate school within 2 years of being released from the military. And I think some of that falls into a category, as I was talking to the commissioner of University of Minnesota and some of their physician degree experience.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to understand that was the intent. I'm not trying to change it, but just to make sure that was the intent of what was going on. Okay.
Representative Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that, Representative Severson, do you have any idea what fiscal impact that would have on the University of Minnesota or Minsku?
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lance. In terms of undergraduate or graduate?
Both. Here's the, this is from higher ed, from their fiscal impact.
We can ask Mr. Burr, perhaps, to
comment on that. Mr. Chairman, Representative Lance, there is a fiscal note requesting on this bill. The fiscal note is not completed. There's a lot of agencies and various people involved in the finance department is not signed up on any part of it yet. Both higher ed systems have, however, put some information in that is preliminary. The only direct cost to the general fund in this bill is the $100,000 appropriation of Minsku that applies to accounts in this committee. Minsku has some narrative saying that they think the residency requirements in here will cost them about $160,000, I believe it is, mm-hmm. a year in foregone tuition revenue. Mm-hmm. And the University of Minnesota has numbers that are closer to $54,000 and increasing to up to about $80,000. It goes up a little bit each year. There's, I think, in their narrative, primarily related to not charging students late fees on being late on there because they with the tuition payment. So, I mean, there's some foregone revenue to both systems. It's not, neither one has put in narrative that says it's very extensive. And that's all preliminary. The finance department has yet to sign up.
Representative Lance?
Just in terms of process, and I know the finance department would, what happens when a state mandate has a fiscal cost to one of these institutions? Does that get reflected in this division's subsequent appropriations to make up that gap, or is the institution simply expected to absorb the costs, or how does that play out?
Representative Severson, do you have an answer?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Lance, I think a lot of these things we do not do a fiscal note on because we cannot get the appropriate data to perspective what's going to happen and what's not going to happen. This bill in its entirety is meant towards, number one, not discriminating against our veterans for their military service, but encouraging them to come to Minnesota, a lot of whom are not coming, as was previously testified to. And in this bill, we're saying veterans are welcome in Minnesota because they become a real source for Minnesota as a manpower shortage that we approach in 2015 and an answer to that manpower shortage. So I would say any fiscal note that would be derived with this would be pretty difficult to determine because right now they're not coming. And then so do we lose revenue? How much do we lose would be a shot in the dark in my estimation. And the benefits that we gain from having those individuals stay in Minnesota, graduate from a Minnesota university, and then transition to our communities would also have to be weighed as a prospective gain to the community. So I know that's a roundabout answer, but I would say that it's pretty difficult to put a fiscal impact on this one.
Representative Lance.
Are there any other situations in which we mandate that the institutions treat people that might not otherwise be considered residents as residents for purposes of tuition?
I'm not sure I can answer that. Mm-hmm.
Aside from the reciprocity, which is a contractual deal.
We may have to do some investigating to get an answer for that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Seat.
And Representative Lass, I believe foreign exchange students are charged in-state tuition. And we have, at St. Cloud State University, not as a matter of statute, but a matter of policy.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not unsympathetic to the goal. I think it's a wonderful goal. But I am a little concerned about establishing in state statute a mandate that one category of people be carved out for special resident tuition, where, frankly, we could be opening the floodgates to all sorts of other categories of people that could come here and make a compelling case that we, the state would be better off if they come here, and therefore to encourage them to come to our state, we ought to give them resident tuition. I could think of a bunch of different situations where that might come up. And I'm sorry, I might have missed some of the testimony as to why they're not coming here. But I'm wondering if there's some other way to deal with it, if there's a different way in terms of financial aid credits or encouraging the institutions to give some special consideration to veteran status when putting together aid packages. I know when they're trying to encourage academically superior students to come to these institutions instead of going to some other institution, scholarships or something that they use as incentives. I'm a little more comfortable kind of leaving it in that realm rather than mandating resident status. Any thoughts on that? I'm trying to find a way to address your concerns, which I think are great, without really opening up the floodgates here for going down the slippery slope, I guess.
I'd only comment, our floodgates open very difficult. They're rusty, so they don't open very easily. Representative Severson.
And, Mr. Chair and Representative Latz, and we have in this package and in our efforts to make Minnesota more of a veteran-friendly place, we've put a couple of purpose statements, one at the beginning of the chapter, which is a bill that's going through now, that basically says that our service members who are taking time off of their own lives to put their lives on the line for our country should receive due consideration for that sacrifice. The provisions in this provision of statute recognize that. And also in the provisions at the start of this bill, there's a provision for retiree pay. And that would again be one of those things that many people would like to say, we too get a pension and we want to be exempted from retiree pay. But there are things that are particular to the military lifestyle and to the sacrifices that have been experienced in that military lifestyle that gives them due consideration for the privileges that we are extending to them. And we've tried to put into writing the reason for those privileges, but we'd be open to, you know, any other efforts that you may see. The thing that becomes very difficult to explain to a veteran who is coming to the state of Minnesota, who has been out there sometimes putting their lives on the line for our freedoms, is to say, you know what, there's a foreign exchange student who's going to this school who's getting in-state tuition, and you have to pay out-of-state tuition. And so when that argument comes forward, it becomes difficult to justify to say you're paying out-state tuition because the taxpayers in Minnesota don't necessarily understand what your sacrifice was.
Mr. Chairman, I can understand. I guess I have trouble following it. Maybe I don't understand it well enough, but if a veteran is living in a state in the United States, if a member of the military, and they get posted overseas and they come back, I would assume they retain as a matter of law the residence status in the state that they hailed from when they joined the military or left the military, don't they? Maybe I just don't understand this. I mean, are they stateless as long as they're in the military and they don't have a state of residence? Because foreign exchange students, obviously, they're residents of France or Belgium or wherever, and that's a different...
Representative Severs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Latz. And under current provisions of law, if a member goes into the military service, they can elect any state they desire to as their state of residency. That's one of the first forms they fill out. Now, if they come back to Minnesota and they elect Minnesota as their state of residency once they move in, statute precludes them from receiving in-state tuition until they've been in that state a year. We're saying that these military members don't have to wait that year. As soon as they come here, if they're going to a university, they can get in-state tuition in Minnesota.
Maybe that's the better place to make this fix then, which is just there's already a statute that addresses the question of you've got to be here at least a year. Maybe we make the fix in that contest. That one-year waiting period is waived. Or a veteran who has come here and has in other documents elected to make Minnesota their state of residence, rather than just a blanket. You know, if a military person has elected Virginia as their state of residence, they could go back to Virginia and get in-state tuition there without any questions asked, I presume. if they choose to come here. Because they've been in the military, I can understand maybe there's some issues relating to residency. And then maybe that's where the correction or the change ought to be made. I don't know, I'm having trouble mandating that the institutions, by statute, that the institutions provide this residency status. And I'm still kind of inclined to think that we ought to encourage institutions to do it, and maybe encourage some form of scholarships that would encourage veterans to come here. But I think just generically saying, we'd love to have you here and we think you're going to benefit the state. Veterans, God bless them, are putting their lives on the line for all of us when they have chosen to do so. I think you need to be, and there are all sorts of benefits which they get financially in addition to their retirement pay and whatever other benefits we already have in place. But this goes in a new area of policy for the state in dealing with their higher education institutions. I'm a little reluctant to take that step in statute.
Members, we will, I believe, be hearing also from Minsky, and maybe they will have some comments to which you've referred, referenced. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just had another one as we were discussing this tuition status that came to mind that I hadn't noticed with my first reading of the bill, but we say they must treat the veteran as a Minnesota resident. And how does that impact on reciprocity with Wisconsin and North Dakota? One way one could read that, we're a high tuition state. And so the current agreements, if I recall correctly, with reciprocity are that they pay the tuition rate of the state that they're leaving. And we've had situations then at times where we've had students sitting side by side from other states who pay lower rates than Minnesota resident. I don't know if all that's been corrected or not. This committee has had proposals dealing with that, but if they haven't been corrected, one could read this language that the student coming over from that other state that has reciprocity and lower tuition must pay the Minnesota rate, the higher rate.
We're
not talking out of state here, Representative Stevenson. We're just talking about the reciprocity agreements and the letter of the law if this were to, in fact, pass that way. Maybe it's something that HECB, if they're going to, or not HECB, and I'm really trying my time back up. ESO.
Office of Higher Education.
Office of Higher Ed, the other had three name changes.
They will perhaps be testifying in a couple of minutes.
If one read that, you could have a strange situation that I think might be different than what your bill is attempting to do.
They may wish to address that when they come up here. Unless you have a comment. Okay. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Latz was bringing up an issue that we, talking about different groups that we're sort of creating some issues for, and one of them was last year when we dealt with the non-resident immigrant tuition deal, and I'm not going to tack it onto your bill.
Thank you.
but I think that we just keep bumping our heads up against this. This is just another example here, and I think that what we really need to do is take a good hard look at out-of-state and in-state tuition issues. We've got about, probably 20 Minskews here in the room. There's probably at least 20 of them that are not charging in-state, out-state tuition differences, and I think that they're obviously getting along just fine in doing that. But I think there's a bigger issue, and that is that Minnesota is going to be needing workers. We need to be friendly, and that's the intention here with Representative Stevenson bringing this bill in here, encouraging veterans to come here. They're good, hardworking people. That's been proven for their years of service in the military, and we want to welcome them, and I think that's fine. We have that same category with a lot of other people, too, and that I think we need to just take a good, hard look at that. We all know that when people go to college here, they have a good experience. We have tremendous education facilities here. This is a great state to live. A lot of them end up staying here. And we're going to need that, folks. We all know what the aging of the demographics in this state is happening. By 2020, we're going to be looking quite different than we are today.
so that I think we should consider that. And that's, this isn't the bill to do it, but I think I would urge this committee to look at that. And the misrepresentative Opatz, he was ready to tackle that last year, so maybe you'll have to step in and take the place, Representative Haas.
Representative Haas.
Thank you, Chair. I was wondering, kind of along that line, what type of flow do we have here? Is this occasional? If we open this up, is there going to be coming from some source, you know, a great deal of veterans? Not that that would discourage me. I'm just wondering if that would happen, or if it's just kind of a random act of veterans coming from other states.
Representative Severson, can you address that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Haas, it's hard to determine. I guess probably Mr. Davis might, you know, in his example, talked about some of those that he's been in contact with that are overseas that are looking at coming to a university. Anything we can do to try and attract these young men and women to Minnesota, I think, is a plus. And I think when they hear what's going on in Minnesota in terms of veteran benefits, it makes their eyes open up a little wider and say, hey, maybe this is an option there. I don't know if I answered your question.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, then I have a question on foreign exchange students. I've heard that a couple of times, but not all foreign exchange students receive Minnesota tuition breaks, do they? I mean, I thought they had to be on programs, as well as some of our students going to foreign countries to school. Isn't that, I mean, that isn't just an open door policy to all people coming in, or is it?
Again, we do have Minsky coming up here in a minute, and I think they can address that question. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If there's no further questions right now of the author, then I'd like to call up Trisha Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Trisha Grimes, and I work for the Office of Higher Education. Susan Hugard sends her regards, and she's sorry she couldn't be here this afternoon, but she had a scheduling conflict. The Office of Higher Education has worked with Minsky, with the Department of Veterans Affairs, with the University of Minnesota, and the private colleges in helping come to the language that is before you in this bill. And there are some differences in some of the provisions. There are places where it says Minsky must, and the University of Minnesota and the private colleges are encouraged to, and that's because of the university's constitutional autonomy and the fact that the state has limited authority over the private colleges, as one would expect. We have been led to believe that the university and the private colleges fully intend to accommodate the veterans as much as they can, and they certainly seem to be committed to that. But I just wanted to make sure that you noted that there is that difference in a number of the provisions. When it comes to recognition of coursework, the language does say that Minsky would accept the credits that have gone through the American Council on Education equivalency process or a similar process, and that the University of Minnesota and the private colleges are requested to do that. I'm told the University of Minnesota and the private colleges have both processes for determining what credits they will accept and appeals processes where if the student doesn't think they got awarded adequate credit for something, they can appeal the process and have it receive another look. The tuition status, Representative Pawlowski, is in fact meant to be different for undergraduates and grad students, and that's partly because of the very major differences between in-state and out-of-state tuition in some of the graduate programs at the University of Minnesota, particularly medical school and law school and so forth. I think Commissioner Dywood spoke directly to the appropriations, so I guess I could take questions if you have any others other than repeating things.
Question.
Representative Pawlowski.
I have a question. The testimony we just heard was that we're going to have several thousand Minnesotans who will be in the military and who may come back within a year or 2 years. How does your office factor that group into your new formula for Minsky?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, the enrollment sensitivity of the funding formula for appropriations for Minnesota University of Minnesota was repealed by this committee.
That's why I'm asking the question.
My understanding is that the Minsky and the University of Minnesota will be formulating their budget requests with their best guesses about what's going to be happening to enrollment, and that will be part of their budget process and what they say they need as we go into the next budget process.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Watson,
and Ms. Grimes, what would be your best guess on the number of these veterans who will take advantage of higher education in one or the other of those two systems?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, I don't know that I could hazard a guess at this point in time. I think it is something that probably we need to do some research based on what's been happening with recent returning vets and how many of them decide to go back to school and so forth.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Pawlowski,
Ms. Grimes, I encourage you to take a look at this. If this could be thousands of new students in these systems, and we've repealed a significant part of the funding formula, which would have recognized them, then the campuses or the systems would eat the new students without a formula that recognizes them. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, correct. Representative Pawlowski, in theory, that is definitely correct, and the systems can always ask for increased funding for increased enrollment. But one of the other things to remember is that many of these, if they are Minnesota residents, many of them may have attended anyway and been part of enrollment that Minsky and the University of Minnesota and the private institutions were looking at anyway. We have reason to believe, if you look at Minnesotans age 18 to 29, for example, that 70% of them have at least some college. And some of them are only 18 and 19 and maybe haven't gone yet. So Minnesotans are quite likely to go to college anyway, and I'm not sure that the fact that they've been veterans will necessarily increase their likelihood of attending.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Ms. Grimes, thank you, because you underscore my point. At the time they were, the formula recognized them. At the time they come back, it won't. So that's my point. What's going to happen if we have an increase, let's say all of them decided to take some form of higher ed and it was in the public sector. I realize that some could be in the private, but let's say it was. I think a large chunk of that's going to be at the Minsky side. So is the new formula that's being developed, how do you recognize that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, perhaps you want to ask this question directly of someone from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system. But
Ms. Grimes, I thought I'd start with you.
The new statute essentially anticipates sort of a base plus method of funding, and that the systems will probably ask for what they think they need, you know, based on their base plus additional money that they think they need based on needs that they have at the time that they have.
Okay, I'll sort of hold and wait for the next group.
A couple other quick questions. We do have one more bill we need to get to today, too. So, Representative Carlson, who's your next?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think you addressed the question that I raised, but I had to step up a moment. But North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, is their tuition still below ours?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, yes, it is.
Okay, that provision then where they must pay the Minnesota rate, how would you interpret that? With our reciprocity states.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I would like to take that question back to Jack Rayburn in our office and talk to him more specifically how it would work. My guess is that if it says they must be defined as a Minnesota resident, that they would indeed probably be paying Minnesota resident tuition. Some of the reciprocity agreements essentially already do that in terms of they charge the higher of the tuitions that the student would have been subject to. The Wisconsin one does not. And even though we have persistently encouraged Wisconsin to negotiate with us on changing the Wisconsin agreement, they have declined to do so for this year, and we anticipate continuing to work with them on in an effort to try to change that agreement for next year.
And Mr. Chairman, my point is that I'm not sure that a careful reading of that section, as I mentioned earlier, achieves what you want to achieve. You may, in fact, be increasing the tuition for students under certain circumstances in reciprocity states. And, I probably won't see this bill until it hits the floor, so maybe the one you want to get back to is the author of the bill, if that's something that needs to be adjusted. Or maybe both of us. I recognize the intent of the bill, but we are dealing with law, and this would be the more recent statute passed. So it would probably preempt anything that would be in a tuition agreement under previous law, but I'll just stop there and you can check with him then and get back to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson.
And Mr. Chair, to that point, I think on the reimbursement side, it's to the, just on a cursory look at this, it would be to the benefit of Minnesota to actually say this is a Minnesota rate, because it's typically going to be either the state of Minnesota paying for that soldier's education or the federal side paying for that education, at which point Minnesota gets reimbursed at a higher level. So I would, just taking a cursory look at this, I would, but I'd like to hear from MinSCU and from the U of M.
Sure, maybe we'd want that to happen then.
Yeah, I'd like to see if we can hear from MinSCU at this time, as quickly as we can. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve France. I'm in the Office of the Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and it's a pleasure to for me to be here today with you representing our activity with our colleagues in the Department of Military Affairs, Veterans Affairs, DEED, and the Office of Higher Education. I'll go briefly through the several points. The first point is the provision of adequate space for veterans assistance offices. We're doing that now at several campuses with the language that has been proposed today and that you've talked about. We see no concerns. We may have logistical concerns, but there is no concern with intent. We might have a problem finding a space somewhere, but the intent of our campuses is that we will certainly provide that space as necessary. Recognition of courses is the next one. We recently did a survey of our campuses on the use of the ACE standards for transfer. Nearly all of our campuses are in compliance with that standard. I didn't say all, nearly all, not quite all, and so we don't see a problem with moving to all at this point. We have a transfer system in place. There is an appeal process at every campus, and statewide we have an appeal process also. So, again, I think that that we are well positioned to meet the requirements of the proposed legislation. Under tuition status, as you know, each system has responsibility for creation of a policy that outlines tuition status for resident and non-resident tuition rates. Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the Board of Trustees, has such a policy. Coincidentally, this policy is up for review on a routine basis this year. We're meeting, in fact, in about 3 weeks to discuss this issue and to develop new language for that. One of the proposals currently on the table is precisely the language that's before you, so we intend that our policy will reflect that kind of information. One of the elements currently in our policy says that institutions, colleges, or universities may adopt a policy for international students. Now, that policy can be in a number of ways, and so it's not uniform. It is not on every campus. Some have adopted such a policy. Some have not. And so it is a permissive policy that we have, not a mandate. But that is in our policy. We do anticipate some foregone revenue, as was discussed earlier. We don't see that as an amount of huge significance, but it certainly will be foregone revenue. The next subdivision, I think 4, talks about the delayed payment of tuition. Fortunately enough, our students helped us to have the foresight on this issue. One of our students, who is the state chair of the Minnesota State University Association, came to us as we were amending a policy just last summer and told us about the issue that he's had with delayed payments from Veterans Administration. And so for that reason and others, we have put in place in policy a delayed payment of tuition deferral process. And so a student who does have benefits coming in, but they will be late, can go to the administration and can get a deferral for that. That's currently in place. It went into effect July 1st, and so I know we'll have no problem administering this part of the law because it's already in our policy. We're fortunate in that our students led us to that one. Under the appropriations, we are looking forward to working with this. The $100,000 that is coming to the Board of Trustees will be used to coordinate. We've been working with the Veterans Assistance folks, veterans in the Department of Veterans Affairs, and talking about their expertise in working with veterans. There's also an expertise needed in working with students, and we need to be training those same folks who are going to be working with the Department of Veterans Affairs on the educational half of the division so that our students are able to get the services from our Veterans Affairs colleagues that will be working in our school. So this is, these are funds for coordination, for training that we're going to be doing in cooperation with our colleagues. We're providing many other services right now for veterans. We're hoping to be a veterans-friendly system. We are currently working with General Shelto and his staff in providing staff to attend the reintegration sessions as appropriate. So we have Minsky admissions or other representative folks as appropriate at those sessions on Saturdays, welcoming back our returning veterans and providing information for them for their next step to college. Mr. Chair, just a second more if I might. I heard this morning on the radio, and this was on Minnesota Public Radio. They talked about a young man who is from Sartell, and a 25-year-old member of the National Guard whose Humvee was blown up by a roadside bomb in Baghdad. Maybe some of you heard the story this morning. And he's enduring many surgeries on his body and has a good portion of his skull replaced by titanium. Quote, the doctors say it'll be tough for him to fully regain all of his mental functions. He'll probably always suffer aches and pains. His body is riddled with shrapnel. His legs and torso are embedded with a piece of bombshell, even parts of the Humvee he was riding in, unquote. Quote again, for his part, Ben Huvel wants to go to college and add to a law enforcement degree he earned before going to Iraq. Jim says he's accomplished so much in the 2 years since his injury that heading back to school and finding a job will be just another step in his recovery, unquote. When Jim comes to our colleges or universities, and if he's in Sartell, whether it be St. Cloud State or St. Cloud Technical College, we want to be ready to support him to be as successful as he can be. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions? Any final comments, Representative Severson, before we make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate all the questions. This is why the bills go through committee. I think there's some good work that's been done here. I appreciate the kind of heads up on some of the issues here, and I think appreciate Minsky's staff and all of the people that have worked hard to make this bill what it hopefully will be when we get it off the floor, and that's a bill that really facilitates our veterans coming back to a state that appreciates their service and that they become a contributing member to our communities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lentz, did you have a final question?
Mr. Chairman, I'm feeling a little awkward only because I have so much respect for our veterans and I worked hard to support them here, and especially given the last testimony from Minsky, it's very heartrending, and it reaffirms my faith in the strength of our veterans and the importance of having them here and encouraging them to come to our state. I'm just wondering if there's a way to deal with the question that I raised about the resident status issue. If maybe the better way to do it might not be dealing with the longer waiting period before they can be declared residents of Minnesota, recognizing there's kind of a unique resident definition issue for folks who are in the military. They're kind of in a stateless situation. And it seems to me perhaps the better way in statute to deal with this would be to say, in the military and you come here to Minnesota to school, that we waive the one-year waiting period. That, I think, is a provision of statute already, as I understand. Is that not...
Mr. Chair and members, Minnesota does not define resident for the purposes of tuition in statute anywhere. The one-year provision was attached. There are two places that occurs. One is for the state grant program, determining eligibility for the state grant program. And the other was attached to the definition of a student for the purposes of paying state payments to Minsky or the University of Minnesota. Last year, the legislature repealed those parts of those provisions, and the rest are proposed to be repealed this year. So we effectively don't have this one-year residency defined in statute.
Mr. Chairman, is it a policy in place then anywhere? Do the institutions utilize it as a policy then?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Flatts, that's correct. It's both the University of Minnesota and MNSCU Board of Trustees and the Board of Regents have it as part of their policy. 1 year.
I guess I'm troubled by this particular provision. I'm not quite sure how to
fix it. Representative Lights, it does have to go to state government, but fine, that's all. You serve on that committee?
No, I don't. It might be the only time I see it, unless it's, I don't see that it's going to the bonding and capital investments.
There'll be time for you to work with someone on that committee if you want, if you're real concerned about that. You could visit with the author and see if there's something that can, that you're comfortable with. I don't know. Right now, I'd like to see us move this through this committee and move it on to state government finance. So, with that, I renew my motion that House File 2921 pass and as amended and be referred to the state government finance committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Representative Dorn. Representative Dorn, welcome to our committee, and I'd like to move House File 2892, and this time perhaps it'll go to the General Register. We'll determine that later.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate the opportunity to be back in the room working with people on this committee. Mr. Chair and members, I think House File 2892 is in itself a simple bill. From time to time, not too often, but I think it's happened five or six times on the Mankato campus, folks have stepped forward and said they would raise the money completely to put up a building or some type of structure using all private dollars. The issue always for the state, of course, has been even if the building is built completely with private dollars, there's the issue of the operating costs. So House File 2892, as it is introduced, is simply the permission for the Board of Trustees to accept the dollars that would fully fund the construction of an academic building, a business school, on the Mankato campus. But I must say, in my mind, the real proposal behind this, not the bill, but what is being proposed, is quite remarkable, because I don't know myself of a time when the proposal would include not only raising the dollars for the building, but also creating an endowment fund to cover the ongoing operations of the building. Perhaps it's happened, and I'm told it might have happened in the University of Minnesota system, but to go beyond just the construction of the building and to create an endowment to fund the operating costs is unusual. And I realize, and so did others, that the bill as introduced doesn't really get to that. So working with some folks this morning, we did come up with an amendment that would specify and put into the bill a reference to the endowment that must be created with non-state money for the operating costs of the building. And Mr. Chair and members, I think at this time, if we can move that, I think we could put the bill into better shape than it was as introduced. I think it does the job we're trying to do. So
we need to have our amendment passed out here. I guess some members can see it. Won't take them long to read it.
No, it's Mr. Chair and members, clearly the intention, and President Davenport is here to go into some of the specifics. The intention is to have an endowment that is more than adequate, that would cover operating costs of the building as operating costs for the structures of this size are determined by Minsky. I must add, if I am correct in characterizing, again, not the bill, which I think is fairly simple because we're merely giving the permission, but if I characterize the effort that's being made as remarkable, if I'm accurate in saying that it goes where we have not gone before, clearly a third part to me does take us even beyond the point of where we've not gone before, because the third piece of the proposal from the college is to raise enough money for an endowment for the faculty and staff salaries as well, so that this is as complete a proposal to use private dollars to put necessary and upgraded facility onto the campus of Minnesota State. That at least is the intention. But I think the bill, if we move this language and put it in, clarifies at least, or gets at the clarification that this is supposed to cover the building and the operating costs. That's what people.
All the members have the amendment, and have had time to read it. Okay, Representative Pulaski moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've kind of laid out what's going on here, but I'm sure, you know, there are detailed questions that people probably have about what is going to be going on the private endowment side of this proposal. So,
did you want the President?
President Davenport is here, and perhaps, Mr. Chair, you could make a few comments, and then if folks have questions about some of the details, he could help with the answers.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm pleased to be here.
Shirt, by the way.
Yeah, you got good taste. Yourself. Well, let me just say it's a good Monday morning. I never want to miss an opportunity to thank you all for the previous project that you've helped support at Minnesota State Mankato, and certainly under the Minnesota State College University system. We do really appreciate it. We rely on your support to help keep our colleges and universities running, and especially those HEPR projects that are so darn important. And that's why this is a unique proposal, is that we're basically saying we're going to put this building up through private funds, and we're going to take care of that HEPR issue that is such a big issue for all of us. So with that, let me just say this is our second major campaign as a university. We have the oldest public university foundation in the state, actually even older than the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. It's been very successful, and as Representative Dorn has indicated, in raising money to put up five or six buildings. This is the first time, however, that we've included within the proposal the endowment of $8 million, which would generate approximately $800,000, I think it's $400,000 per year for endowment. for keeper and other related general operating expenses, including faculty and staff. We did our due diligence on that, and the Minsky staff helped us determine the amount we needed. We actually almost have double the amount we need for general operating. So we're very confident with this funding goal. Our previous campaign was a $35 million campaign. We exceeded that by five. That was 2 years ago, so we raised about $40 million. This campaign is $57 million, and the campaign, $24 million of it includes the College of Building, the College of Business Building, and $8 million is set aside on top of that for the endowment. So we think we'll be in good shape. We will cover the design costs. We'll also cover the construction costs, and as I've already stated a few times, general operating. We've had the firm, very well-known national firm, Benz Whaley Fleshner, work with us over the last 2 to 3 years to determine that they're confident that we can raise that amount of money to make this all happen. I would suspect some of you are wondering, why are we going this route? Why don't we just wait and ask when it comes our turn to get support through the normal bonding process? And I guess I would say our enrollment is soaring. It's just incredible. We're one of four universities in the state that's accredited by the National Accrediting Body for Business, the AACSB accrediting body. We are adding a whole new wing to our project of the Entrepreneurship Center, which is heavily supported by the community and in the region in southern Minnesota, where we hope to serve that part of the state. And this is a also helps us to address a huge space shortage of about 250,000 square feet on campus. So we could wait until the year 2012, but let me just give you an idea on the enrollment, and then I'll stand for questions if you'd like. In the year 2000, we had 1,600 undergraduate majors. Today, we have 2,100 undergraduate majors in the College of Business. We are predicting 2,900 majors within 3 years. So we are running out of room and classes and space. In addition to that, our graduate enrollment will double within 3 years since we're now accredited with our executive MBA program. So we're very excited about it. We hope that you will support this bill, this proposal, and we're looking forward to getting our campaign off the ground. Thank you all.
Thank you very much, Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, this is a question for Minsky because Mr. Johnson is here. We've got an ongoing discussion in capital investment and in this committee on how Minsky will handle large private sector donations, and this one is exceedingly unique because it's an entire building. So if Minsky could, for the record, tell me, with the policy that's being developed, and the last time we talked was Thursday in 2008, will this type of a donation also be covered under the policy that we haven't seen yet but we understand is being developed?
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Alan Johnson from Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Representative Pulaski, to your question, this type of gift giving will certainly be addressed in that development of policy,
Mr.
as we
Chair.
Go forward.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, when we see this policy, will Minsky need authority such as we have in this bill to do it? Or once you have the policy established, can you move forward without case-by-case bills such as this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pulaski, the policy that I was discussing and that we've talked about in testimony really goes towards the evaluation of capital projects that have a bonding, that have GO bonding attached to them. A project such as this, which has no state funds attached to it, still would require authorization. As we're coming, we don't have the authorization to build a project such as this outright on state property.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Pulaski,
I would encourage us to take a look at this and consider such authorization in your new policy, mainly because we're a part-time legislature and we're not here year-round. Seasonal construction, donations, there are a number of issues that come forward. We handled something on a much smaller scale in the mid-90s, and I think it might be time to take a look at what are you going to do with whole buildings if they come before you. So
I would hope at least there'd be some address of that in the new policy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pelosi would be very happy to look at that.
All right. I thought you might.
Members, I would suggest at this point that my motion be that this pass and be placed on the consent calendar. How does that feel?
Good idea. Mm-hmm. Should work fine.
Well, that'll be my motion then, that House File 2892 pass and be referred to the consent calendar. Is that okay with the office? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems that this would fit, you know, on that path. And again, I appreciate the fact that you folks have given it the hearing and your attention, because the goal is, as soon as the authority is there, the fundraising begins and they can get moving on, again, what I think is even more remarkable than I first thought when they brought the bill to me, as I thought about how far it goes in terms of raising dollars for higher education needs.
Okay, then need to vote. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We have one more item on our agenda, and that is the on Tuesday, tomorrow, I go before the Capital Investment Committee. And you
we'll miss you, bud.
Yeah. Still looking for some that have done that.
It's not a search party.
You're all invited to come with
me. We'll find you, don't worry.
You're all invited to come along. So we have the letter that you were given last week, and I haven't heard from anyone that it's missing the mark. Also attached to the letter, you also will see the lists from NIMSCU and the university. Our intent basically to forward it as presented to us with the third sheet on the back, listing some of the items, some of the bills that were presented to us separately, and with the suggestion to the Capital Investment Committee that they take a hard look at those on the list to see if there is possibility of including those in the final bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Lance.
And I appreciate the opportunity to have heard of those additional six bills. I do have some real concerns about process here, not in terms of the chairman's process, but in terms of the process of the bills that we heard. Quite bluntly, I guess, they appear to have made an end run, or are attempting to make an end run around NIMSCU's and the University of Minnesota's, the Board of Regents and the Board of Trustees established processes for determining system priorities and making their requests to the legislature. And while I know that, or at least I've been led to believe that in years past, it was the process, I think, for this committee to hear lots of these individual projects with much less regard for the system's prioritization process. I'm led to believe from both the systems and from individuals I've communicated with within the systems that there's a great deal now of confidence in the integrity of the sorting out process and the prioritization process within, for example, NIMSCU, in taking the recommendations of the Technical Advisory Committee within NIMSCU of each campus going through their own vetting process, and then the Technical Advisory Committee's recommendations being prioritized such as they will be by the Board of Trustees. And so I've got, I think we're now faced with, in fact, this committee had raised some very serious concerns about that process in the past, and I think the systems have responded by being more, being more careful about the process so that we can rely upon their recommendations with greater confidence when they come to us. And so, without questioning any of the specific merits of any of the very exciting proposals that we heard in those additional six bills. I'm reluctant to go forward with a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee that might be perceived as saying, taking limited dollars and encouraging them, frankly, to do as they will with those limited dollars. I mean, each of the project's proponents, and or I should say in particular Minsky and the U, each indicated that given the fact that there's a limited pot of money available for higher education projects, whether it's the pot that the governor's proposed or some other dollar amount, that they stick by their system requests in terms of their priorities and would reject these individual proposals. And I think that we as a committee, having encouraged them to have a better process, have at least some obligation to recognize those priorities. And so I would move the committee to bifurcate or divide the question that you proposed, Mr. Chairman, in your letter, so that we would first vote on the specific system requests and priorities, and then we would have a separate vote with regard to whether or not to pass on the additional six bills priorities or projects that have been proposed.
Representative Latz, I understand what you're saying. I guess in my mind, I'm not saying that these six have any priority necessarily from this committee, except for the fact that they have some uniquenesses that the Capital Investment Committee may take into consideration in their final bill. So by attaching them, it's only the fact that some of them relate the process as far as getting in on the list. And or because of the local private funds that are involved in at least two or three of those projects, that you know that has some consideration. But again, I don't. In my presentation to the committee, will not be that we're doing any more than at least calling attention that these are not on the list for very specific reasons, and it'll be basically that. That's how I present it. If that doesn't give you any comfort, then we'll go the way that you're suggesting. But
well, Mr. Chairman, part of my concern is that doing it the way you're suggesting right now actually will encourage in future years more and more individual campuses or projects to try to make an end run around the system process and come before this committee. And part of what this whole thing raised is maybe we need to look at some more comprehensive reform of the capital investment process. If it's an 18-month lead time, and there are some very real concerns about, you know, great contributions come up, you know, we don't learn about an idea until it's too late to get into the system priority process, or there's all of a sudden a donor wants to make $10 million available. Maybe the systems need to find some way, and we need to find some way, and the Capital Investment Committee does, to be able to have the ability to adjust priorities as circumstances might warrant. But we don't have that situation right now. I'd certainly love to work on some idea of reforming the process, but I think you know, some of these even bypass the Technical Advisory Committee's recommendations from Minsky. So
the process does allow each of us to bring forward any idea or project that we choose. And I understand what you're saying. We'll have to make a decision here pretty soon.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have two questions with the motion before us. I'm not sure what the status would be of House File 3443 because it, in effect, at least as a project, appears on both lists. And my question is of Representative Pawlowski. Is the difference, and the difference seems to be the number, $5 million as far as the bill is concerned, and then the $400,000. Is the difference we're talking about here that was it a $3.5 million match in part, or say, I do think there's a little difference with House File 3443, and it does appear on the list. Different amount, but it's on the list. The other five do not appear on the list, and it does raise a question. Some of us have followed the process. In fact, years ago I was a strong advocate of following, when I was in the very seat that you're in, the system request. Now, there's four of us on this committee, I'm going to be very frank, who come from the northern and western suburbs, both sides of the aisle, and there are projects that did not make it on the list. Now, the four of us haven't talked, but we honored the list. I think there were 20-some projects. Two of those campuses have not had a project in over 10 years. There's a powerful message to some of us sitting on the committee, not quite a majority, but four, that we should probably be bringing forward then those bills that didn't even make it onto the Minsky list, some of which have been around a while. And the underlying reason that I asked the question that I did the other day about when the Chancellor was here, which projects would be next up? Because you do have that category of projects then that didn't make the Minsky cut, but certainly have been in some instances requested for more than one biennium already. So I think we have a very important principle that Representative Latz has brought forward here. There was, quite frankly, a time in this legislature where if you were in a couple of key positions, it didn't make any difference what list you were looking at, you could bring a project forward. And it hasn't always served the state particularly well either when that happened. Other times it maybe was a good viable project, and I don't want to point fingers on ancient history as to what may have been a good project and what may not have been that was brought forward without really a formal request to review by any of the systems, but there have been some of those. So, Mr. Chairman, I clearly think that number one clearly belongs on the list in some form, the 3443, but the rest of them are the ones that are raising that principle that I'm referring to.
There isn't any question about the Winona project, as it is on the list.
Yeah, the amount is slightly different,
right.
But it's the other five that I think go to the policy question that Representative Latz brings forward with his motion.
You want to renew your motion? Maybe you haven't actually officially offered it. But
yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move to divide the question before the committee to first vote on the question of whether or not the system priorities of the University of Minnesota and Minsky should be recommended to the Capital Investment Committee in the order and in the amounts that are requested by the systems, and then to separately consider the question of whether or not the additional five bills ought to be recommended to the Capital Investment Committee for consideration.
Any questions,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
on the first part of the if Representative Latz is going to officially divide it, on the first part, I would just like to say that I have been my expectations have been exceeded as to the care and detail that both the University of Minnesota and Minsky went through in putting together their lists. I think that they have a very good process in place, and I understand in the governor's proposal that some were kind of skipped over, and I can understand those priorities, but at least as one committee member who was kind of a first termer on this committee and perhaps the last termer on this committee, and the papers are to be believed, I would like to thank Minsky for the thoughtfulness and care that they took in putting together their priority list this year. I think it is far better than the work that they've done in the past, and I would like to encourage it in the future, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Then I think we're ready to vote on the first part of the questions. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The first half has passed. And the second, referencing 2 through 6 on the third page. And the motion, could you restate that again?
Mr. Chairman, at this time the motion would be that we do not recommend to the Capital Investment Committee, or not even pass on to the Capital Investment Committee, projects 2 through 6 on the second list.
Any questions?
Technicality. I think that you brought insisted technical thing just for future. Your motion would have been to approve the list, and the last motion was to divide it. So, actually, so the motion.
That's not the right question.
Yeah. So I just think that you don't get to restate it, but you could. So again, we vote yes and no, and if the no's prevail, it doesn't go forward. If we vote yes, then it goes forward. Is that?
That's right.
Just to be fair,
Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. I incorrectly stated what the motion should be. So it's your motion. I just divided the question.
Good point.
Thank you, Representative Abler.
I guess you could have been. You just confused
me. Chair, and kind of taking off of what Representative Abler said, I guess my understanding when the issue was brought forward is that the division of the question would be somewhat different from what you stated, which is corrected here. But I think we need to be careful also to recognize that if this committee simply just passes on the two requests of the University of Minnesota and Minsky, then what's the point of the committee? I mean, we hear other requests. Every legislator has the ability to bring forth any proposal or request that he wants, he or she wants. And I think it's our job to look at these issues and see if they have merit. And clearly some of them did have some merit. You know, they just, they were, there were some unique circumstances that happened so that they weren't, and I think this committee should be making the final request, and it should not just be a rubber stamp that we approve the agency's requests and we disapprove all of the legislative requests. So I think that's kind of where I'm coming from, and I think that, but that's been corrected, but that was my initial response when you made your motion the way it was worded. So.
Well, Representative Weiss. Mr. Chairman, I certainly appreciate what Representative Eastland is saying, and I think if this committee were going to get into the question of prioritizing, then we should be looking at the whole pot and deciding if we're going to substitute or change or reprioritize or anything. But the chairman, having announced his intent and desire to accept the systems prioritizations for the first batch, then it seems to me if we are going to exercise any responsibility here, then that is what we're passing on to the committee, and to then add another 2 through 6 and tell Capital Investment Committee, well, you figure out what the priorities are. We're supposed to be the experts in higher education stuff, but you go figure out what projects really deserve to be funded and which ones don't. It seems to me that would be an abdication of our committee's responsibility. Also, frankly, it would send out a message loud and clear to every campus and every legislator that if you want to have a question or a project considered, get your bill in now for next year or for 2 years or whenever we're going to have the next capital investment bill, or this process isn't even over yet, maybe you can get something inserted between now and the end of session, because you don't have to come through higher ed anymore, or you don't have to go through your systems anymore. Just get you going, and it really will make a whole mess out of this system, and that's why I think we ought to not send this on.
There's
my logic.
In the last bonding bill, there were some changes in the priority list in 2005. The bill we passed was not identical to what the systems had brought to us. But he has done it. I've chosen this year partly because we want to move as fast as we can to make the, you know, to not get into that because it would have dragged out the process. Representative Eastman?
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying, Representative Latz, and I guess all I'm saying is that I think by the action that we're taking here today is we're simply saying is the two agency's bills are the highest priority and these are tacked on to the end as probably below anything that's ranked on their list. And I think we have not gotten into the position of actually throwing projects out. I think we are, whether we like it or not, we are kind of ranking them. And so I would like to see us pass this on as a second recommendation, which clearly places it below the recommendations of the institutions.
Representative Haas? Representative Haas, you have a comment?
Nothing.
Okay.
No.
Any other clarifications or comments.
Mr. Chairman, would you explain to me now, just so that I've got a clarification, what does a yes vote indicate?
As I understand it, a yes vote would mean tomorrow when I present this to the Capital Investment Committee, I would present the list from MinSCU and the University of Minnesota with the addition of these five projects as a not a recommendation that they be included, but that they merit at least a consideration by that committee. At that point, it's up to the chairs, I mean, not the chairs, but the authors of those particular bills to do the rest of the work. That's simply what I, as I see it.
Mr. Chairman, I also have a clarification.
Representative Dempsey, does that answer your question?
Yes, but maybe, okay, yes.
It's not a recommendation that they be included, only that they have merit for consideration by that committee.
Representative Lance. In response to Representative Eastland's comments, then, is it the chair's intent that a yes vote also mean that we are recommending that the system's priorities are higher priority than the additional five projects?
That would be my understanding, yes. But again, they have the ultimate decision. The Capital Investment Committee can make a lot of changes if they choose to. I don't think they necessarily will, but they could. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if these five projects that we're talking about now go forward, the message to the communities out there that honored the MinSCU request list is that they begin to advocate, push their presidents, and that's happened, to ignore the MinSCU list. I think there were something like 27 projects, if I recall correctly, the nodding is yes, that never made it onto the list. Those presidents out there, they honored the MinSCU list, their communities honored the MinSCU list, and now we're saying that those situations where it was ignored, and I'm talking now, I didn't ask the same question of the U of M, I did of MinSCU, so they may have had some that didn't make the list as well. And there has been times, Mr. Chairman, and I've talked with presidents that have had immense community pressure placed on them to ignore the MinSCU board, to ignore the chancellor's office and come forward with their own project. And that's what we're opening the door here for. And then we become the final arbitrators in that whole situation. And it can get, believe me, because I was there before we really had these lists, and especially when the tech colleges were locally controlled, it got very messy at times. And that's what the risk here is.
Okay. I guess I'm encouraging a no vote.
Members, we're ready to vote again. All those in favor of that second motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
The second motion also is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I have another motion.
Representative Blatt.
Since this committee has decided to send on the additional five projects that were not part of the system requests, Mr. Chairman, I move that in addition to those, that we also pass on the other projects that were recommended by MinSCU's Technical Advisory Committee to the MinSCU Board of Trustees, but which did not make the cut for a recommendation by the MinSCU Board to this legislature. And these are all projects which were recommended by the Technical Advisory Committee, but have not had individual legislators introduce bills to make those projects part of this process, such as the five that we just sent on. So I think at least if we're going to bypass MinSCU's process, we ought to at least bypass it in such a way that we continue to respect some of their prioritization in their process with their Technical Advisory Committee. And I'd ask if staff would pass out this list of those projects that I made for my motion.
What is the total, if I can ask, Mr. Representative Lance, on your list?
The number? Mr. Chairman, 14 additional projects, which include Minsky's system-wide workforce initiative renovations. So it's one system-wide project on there. The rest of them are individual campus projects. There is no duplication here. Some of the projects, I think, of the five that we just passed on to the Capital Investment Committee were on the Technical Advisory Committee list somewhere in the priority ranking. What I have done, Mr. Chairman, is taken the rest of the Technical Advisory Committee list that went to the Minsky Board of Trustees that has not made it either into their system recommendations or made it before this committee as individual bills, and said let's at least take these and let the Capital Investment Committee then sort out the priorities, recommending that they also be ranked below the 27, the first list that Minsky had prioritized, and be categorized then with the other five as basically unranked in priority but lower than Minsky's initial request.
Representative Lance, the only comment I would have is the difference is we have not heard any of these, and so it's very difficult for us to just vote to send them on without really knowing what we're doing.
Mr. Chair?
We did hear those other bills, so that's part of the difference. I see it. Representative Cox.
Real quick question, Mr. Chair. Do you know if there's matching private funds that are attached to any of these projects that were just handed out?
I don't.
Thank you.
Representative Lance, do you?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. There may be, there may not be. For some reason, the Minsky Board of Trustees decided not to include these on their list of priorities with or without matching funds. But they were recommended and ranked by the Minsky Technical Advisory Committee as a product of apparently about a year's worth of analysis and prioritization and evaluation by all of the Minsky campuses, the process that they set in place. So I think we at least ought to respect that if we're going to respect projects which come completely out of priority got a hearing before this committee. If we're going to get a little bit involved in these kind of decisions, then we ought to just do it.
Representative Weiss, I understand what you're saying, and I understand what you're doing, and you have the right to do that. I'm going to recommend a no vote, however. Almost two-thirds besides, but yeah, that's immaterial. We do want to vote on your. You made an official motion.
I think I did make an official motion. Let me simply add: if we don't adopt this list, we will be sending a message to at least everyone on this list and everyone else that they ought to just bypass the Minsky system priority or process in the future and just come straight to here. And Mr. Chairman, we will be hearing. We'll have a lot more hearings on individual projects than we had this year. If that's the message that we're going to send. But that's up to this committee if that's what we want to do.
All right, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All those... all those opposed, say no.
No.
And it's the noes that have it. We have no minutes to approve today. With that, our meeting is adjourned.